everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about HR with the people who make it happen. So want to get to our guests as quickly as possible. So interesting. It's been way too long since we've had you on. Kathy McGinnis, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you, Brian and Nisha. So nice to meet you as well. I'm delighted to be here with everyone today.
Well, if you would introduce yourself to our millions of listeners, and then we'll kind of roll into what's top of mind for you.
Sure, that's great. Well, I'm sitting here in a rainy but still warm Austin, Texas, having moved here from New York about 17 years ago. My career is one that has been in executive recruiting, started in the London office of Russell Reynolds, moved back to New York, worked there for quite a few years for Heidrick & Struggles and some boutique search firms, and ultimately landed in Austin, a great town, a burgeoning economy, and worked for Dell for 10 years, hiring people all over the world into executive roles for all different functional areas. And then also more recently went back to some of my writing roots and had my first novel published, Emperor's Clothes. It's a satire about a mob boss turned executive recruiter and a couple of self-centered executives who leveraged all of the mob boss's skills to advance their careers. So life is good and busy, and still doing a lot of search work through Priod, my search consulting firm, and also advising startups on HR activities.
Well, and if you, thank you, by the way, if you would, what is the name of your first novel before we jump into the HR, you know, to the thought leadership stuff?
Thank you. The novel is called Emperor's Clothes, and it is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's online. It's an e-book as well. Was a bestseller here in Austin, getting a lot of good press. And it's been a fun opportunity to talk to people about some of the, kind of looking at the people side of the mad rush to be something that businesses have experienced over the last 10 to 15 years.
Perfect. Well, let's jump right into it. And kind of what's top of mind with you these days, or, you know, just good or bad? If you'd share that, that'd be great.
Sure. I am delighted to be here with you. I mentioned earlier that I recently had the opportunity to speak with several CEOs, consultants, and HR leaders about what they expect of their C-suite, direct reports, and what they look for in talent being evaluated for those roles. One key word that came up regularly in those discussions was relevancy. How can a professional make themselves relevant to the team, to the business, to their leadership? And, of course, why is relevancy important? You know, one after another, business leaders implied that the more indispensable someone is, the more likely promotional opportunities will happen for them. So how to do this? And as we start to sort of peel back relevancy, this seems to be an area ripe for HR and HR leaders to be engaged in coaching key talent who want to move up, what they need to do. Now, you know, anyone can answer the question of relevancy and make a difference by addressing low-hanging fruit. There's always low-hanging fruit. There are always processes that can be streamlined and costs can be cut. But what about the bigger picture and ways that HR leaders can advise professionals and executives to begin to think about things with regard to being relevant in a bigger, broader way? Now, three things seem to emerge, and these are sort of the framework that came out of my discussions. One is be a business leader first, and there's sort of more to this that we can tease out in discussions. Second is engagement. Understand your business partners, and your business partners are not only your boss who are the business clients internally and externally, and then finally credibility. And this is goes without saying, but it did come up several times. Do what you say you're going to do. There are tactical pieces to this as well that we can get into if there's time, techniques about how to turn relevancy into promotional opportunities by doing things like knowing how to pitch your story, knowing how to engage with recruiters. So if we have time later on, we can certainly get into that a little bit. I noticed in Yahoo News, actually in March of this year, there was an interesting comment. It was really about marketing, but I think it has application here. Brett Baer, who's the Senior Director of Strategic Services at Monetate, said, being relevant means taking action based on what you know about your customers. I think this is good advice for HR to think about in giving leaders, business leaders and professionals. And, of course, you have to know first who your customers are, right? So how can HR do this? How can HR encourage people to be relevant? Certainly, they can engage the leaders in really focusing on assignments, asking for and accepting assignments that are very connected to business priorities. And that's everyone has stories about being sort of waylaid or getting off track in their career with different kinds of projects. There are things that we all have to do to take for the team, if you will. But if you are being relevant and being relevant to the business, you really should know what those business priorities are. There's no reason that individuals can't know almost as much as a CEO, even by reading what public information is available about their own company and about competitors, and put that to work. And these are things that, believe it or not, a lot of people don't realize, and I think HR could be a good guide here in helping people choose assignments, especially those HR folks that are really engaged with coaching individuals in a business, which is, you know, should be part of their responsibilities. Another piece here is to engage your business partners early and often. Nobody likes surprises. And this makes everyone feel relevant. It reinforces the importance of a particular project, encourages others to share in someone's success. This is a positive. It's a feel-good message that HR should deliver and can deliver by encouraging people to engage their business partners, again, early and often. Understanding the big...
Just real quick, I want to jump in. This is always a question that comes up with any type of concept, framework, thought process. Is this really a small company, a big company? I mean, where are the limitations on this, or are there any limitations?
So the limitations are only insofar as the accountability and responsibility that HR people have. I've been involved with startups where there were 20 people, but HR was expected to play a very significant role in not only getting the tactical HR administrative work done, but very much guiding everybody in the organization around what they can do to help advance the business. So it really does come from the top, right? So what allowances does the CEO and the leadership give to HR? That can be at a small company. That can be at a huge company. It comes to culture.
Do you feel? And I've been thinking about a blog post lately, just writing some content around this. And I don't know what to do. So maybe you'll pull the pieces together for me. So, do you think a lot of this within the HR practice and by practitioners? That HR and the talent strategies are too forced, that there's not enough natural kind of organic or the minutia that it is allowed to happen versus like, I'm trying to force it. And unfortunately, sometimes forcing it does more harm than good.
Ask a clarifying question. Are you talking about sort of the advisory role that HR can play?
Yeah, trying to literally kind of you start talking about trying to be more authentic or trying to kind of really define intent as far as, like, I guess an advisory role is a good way to put it, trying to help steer kind of the people strategy of the organization.
So I agree that it should be natural. Some things just occur and come up and have to happen. Here's where I think the weakness is, particularly from the point of view of the advisory work. So there are tactical things that anyone in any part of their HR career can jump in and get done, administrative things. I think the weakness is in some businesses, leadership will assume, oh, let's put so-and-so in HR, they can do that. And the next thing you know, that person finds themselves in the role, similar to what you're alluding to, where they have to give advice, they need to advise, and they may not have enough business maturity and experience to be in that position. So I think that's it speaks to the person, and I think it goes back to the leadership and recognizing what will be expected of HR in the business. And if they are expected to be involved in moving the needle and making things happen, they need to pick someone and hire someone who has the maturity to be able to mix it up with a variety of personalities and be able to influence them successfully.
Nice. So just kind of to continue on, and I jumped right in the middle there, I think you had one or two more areas that you wanted to talk about relative to kind of the framework.
Yeah, so you've just touched on one of them, the importance of the big picture. That's understanding the culture, including the organizational politics, the relationships, how to communicate. This is where HR can be a lot of help, again, having the right HR person. And, you know, the bottom line is, how can you be relevant? You can be indispensable. I mean, you mentioned my novel earlier, I have a mob boss, and he made himself indispensable to his clients. You might not like his methods, but where it concerned dead wood or underperforming assets, he moved the inventory in quickly. This is an extreme example, of course, but it can still make the point. How can HR help? HR should help guide by asking people that they're coaching some key questions, right? Why are you doing this project? Back to accepting assignments that are relevant to business priorities. So why are you doing this particular project versus that project? Get them to think through before sort of jumping in and assuming responsibility. What is the business gain from what you're doing? And really understand, who are your clients? Who are your business partners? What are their expectations? Those business partners play a very big role in promotional opportunities, and a lot of people don't necessarily realize that. Sometimes it's direct, sometimes it's subtle. But when you think about some key factors for promotion, some things are clearly no-brainers, expertise in a field or ability to lead people, following through on commitments. But there are a few aha moments. How many HR leaders might encourage the people on their team, the professionals, the executives, to seek experience or new ideas outside of the organization? One executive I know regularly tells his people there's only so much to learn inside the company. He expects them to engage with networking, with peer organizations. He wants new ideas, and he's a little bit unusual in that he's not afraid to take the chance of exposing his team, which is a good team, to external forces where, you know, they could get recruited away. But HR should be advising clients, advising the people in their organization about how to articulate, how to demonstrate their understanding of the business and what their function can do to advance the agenda. They should encourage professionals and executives to engage their business partners from the get-go. We talked about that before. Those business partners make a very big difference in promotional opportunities, and they can be the yes or no decision makers. And, you know, you've always got to be able to recruit and retain talent. So this is an area where HR can be involved, even subtly, threaded throughout. Whether or not you're in a big hiring mode or not, even if you're not hiring, you should be retaining. And HR needs to very proactively encourage their manager, the managers that they're advising, how to keep people engaged, how to make sure people feel their work is connected, again, to those business priorities, and how communicate where their own promotional opportunities might be in the organization. So these are ways that HR can constantly be, you know, massaging the process and encouraging their clients.
Wouldn't just real quick, wouldn't it be an amazing place? I know this happens in a handful of companies when HR can be, you know, somebody in HR collectively can be the ones that both top to bottom, people walk in and say, I want to say this, but I'm fearful to do it. And HR basically helps navigate and say, okay, why are you fearful of sharing an idea? And kind of figures out one side and then goes on the other side and says, okay, let's figure this out so we don't have an environment where people aren't able to just throw this out there and we rise the tide of the organization, right? They kind of help. They're kind of like that Sherpa in between that's literally like, okay, let's get everybody in the room and let's pound this thing out. Let's figure out kind of what the next version looks like and let's get people really confident and trusting that this is a place that they could actually speak their mind. That's my utopian world right there. I wanted to share for everybody in case you don't do that.
And, you know, to that point, we could turn this framework and these advice around for HR people. I mean, HR people, to be successful, as you've just described it, need to know who their clients are and need to know what the business priorities are, how their role impacts those business priorities. They have to have credibility. So these things go without saying, but to your point, we can't do any of the above unless that is true. Those things are true and regularly engaged. So there's no sort of sitting back on your laurels with regard to opportunities to build relationships. I mean, all of these things that we're saying HR should do for their clients, they need to do as well. And in fact, could be the example, right?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Go ahead, Nisha.
I'm going to do a quick reset, everybody. This is Brian and Nisha talking to our wonderful guest, Kathy McInnes. Well, Kathy, I've just noted down a few quotes that you have said right now, you know, understanding the culture and then the communication aspect of it. So I have these two questions in my mind. One is, does organization culture change when its leadership change? And if so, what's the role of HR to, you know, in this time to keep a balance of it?
So that's a great question. Let me take it in two parts. Does the organization culture change if the leadership changes? And I'm assuming you mean the CEO when you say the leadership.
Yes, exactly. Because you have been recruiting leaders for all over the world for a longer period of time. So you have worked with, you know, a lot of search executives and then CEOs. So you are the right person to talk about this particular matter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. My answer would be it doesn't have to. Now, some leaders are hired in from the outside in order to affect a cultural change. And sometimes that's successful, sometimes it's not. Unfortunately, we have a very good one, a recent one here in Texas that was not successful when I think it was Ron Johnson came in from Apple to run JCPenney. And now 18 months later, he's, they've got some ads running and they're on across the nation with regard to, we know we changed. We know you didn't like it. We're going back to who we were. So, you know, so there are some very famous cases where execs have come in to try to make a change. And JCPenney board felt that the results were not what they should have been. That's why they wanted to do an extreme change. So that didn't work. It doesn't have to be that way, though. Sometimes, I mean, and this more often happens when you have a succession plan inside. And I was at Dell for about 10 years. We had a number of opportunities within various business units where we had identified people within the organization, and we basically moved people up from within. And part of the reason to do that was we had a culture that was very successful and wanted to maintain that, because that culture was real lifeblood to how the business got done. So it really, I think it depends on back to the business priorities, back to what the business wants to do. It can work either way, or it might not work. The role that HR plays in either case is to do everything they can to affect a successful onboarding and, if you will, landing of that new leader in that business unit. There are, again, tactical things to do, have meetings with the team, the new manager meetings, offsites, and those things should not be understated. They really are important. Whenever there's a new leader, there are a lot of questions. There's often some concern. People don't know what it means for their work, for their position, for their relevancy to the new team. So the sooner that HR can engage in taking as many questions off the table as possible by answering them, the better. But that's just the beginning. HR really is the glue that will make that transition work, by either engaging the new leader in the culture, by helping him or her understand how things work, how communication happens, how influence, you know, is done in the organization, or a little more dramatic is helping that new leader drive cultural changes. And in either case, HR is critical to really the timeline of success. And the sooner these things are done, the better, has been my experience.
Cool. That's such a great insights out there. Well, talking about the onboarding activities, especially to the leaders and the CEOs, so do you have any particular strategies that HR should, you know, look for in terms of onboarding the leaders?
Well, somebody coming in from the outside, there are a couple of key things that HR can help with, and this is going to sound really simple, but I found this. We did some studies on this when I was at Dell. One of the key things that's incredibly helpful to a new leader is an established administrative assistant. So someone who knows the ropes and has relationships has been proven time and time again to be incredibly successful for someone who's a new exec coming in from the outside, particularly to engage with the business. I mean, that's someone who's going to be around them more often than the HR person, and can really help guide them in terms of how things get done. And, you know, I wouldn't send that email that way, kind of deal. The other thing is, from an onboarding perspective, and I'm talking about executives, but I think this is true certainly through middle management, HR can be involved in monitoring the relocation. The sooner that someone is in the new location and their family is here and the trailing issues of selling a house here, putting kids in a new school are resolved, the better. Now, HR can't put the kids in school or drive them to school, but they can make sure that the tools that are available, the processes that the company engages are successful ones, and it doesn't hurt to touch base with that new executive and, you know, sit down over lunch in an informal way and try to understand where they're at. More often than not, in my experience, executives who have disengaged at least 50% or not more of the time, it's a family situation that just hasn't engaged successfully in the new venue. And there are opportunities to make sure that that works. And the sooner you sell the house in Cincinnati and, you know, move to California, the better. It's not sitting on everybody's minds, and the executive can focus on their team and on driving those business priorities.
Perfect. So we've got about 3.5 minutes left, and I wanted to jump in and actually talk a little bit about what you're seeing and experiencing in the startup landscape, because I know you said you're working with a startup or some startups,
right?
And curious to hear your experience with that.
So from the point of view of HR, HR can play a very key role. If somebody really wants to be involved as an advisor to leadership and engaging with business priorities, I'd say the place to do it is to take an HR role in a startup. It's an all-hands-on-deck environment. You've got to know the business. You definitely know the players, and more often than not, it's 2 or 3 or 10 or 15. So it's easy to get your arms around the people, the personalities, and you have to understand every single aspect of the business, from how they're funded to the next round of capitalization through to supply chain issues and what that means very specifically for the leadership hired to take responsibility for different areas. It's a great, great way to very quickly hone those advisory skills that you were referencing earlier, Brian. You can't not be an advisor in a startup. Your advisory skills can get assumed and sometimes lost in a larger company. But I think startups are a great place for people who are, again, with some experience. So not a newbie, but somebody with some 10 to 15 years experience who really is itching for that role to be strategic with the leadership team, jump into a startup. We've got quite a few of them here in Austin. So a lot of opportunities here.
Well, and that's, one of the things that with startups is the fact that you really can start to get creep and drift relative to the planning and kind of like not actioning and actually mm-hmm. going and doing it, because at the end of the day, somebody has got to go do it every day, right? Whatever it is, whether it's selling a product, whether it's talking to people, whether it's releasing something, whatever it is, if you're doing a little bit of it every single day and a lot of it some days, odds are you got a pretty good shot. So don't get caught up in the weeks and the months going by and it's like, uh-oh, and then you kind of panic. And we see that, and I've done that. And then you kind of panic and you react versus respond to what your plan was, and that tends to not work out as well. So, well, thank you so much for coming on. It is so good to hear your voice. I love your thought process. Always do. Plus, everybody, if you haven't checked out Kathy's novel, it is fantastic. Get it soon. You'll be a better human being for reading it. So I look forward to hopefully connecting with you in Austin in September. Everybody, we are out of here.